Coming up on Tech News Today, BlackBerry may spin off BlackBerry Messenger. Long passwords now less secure, and Apple TV gets more partners. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, August 27th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT8. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show. We keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world. Try to put them in some context for you. We'll kick it off with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Wall Street Journal reports BlackBerry is seriously considering spinning off its BlackBerry Messenger unit into a subsidiary to be known as BBM Inc. The report notes several executives have been moved into the Messenger unit already. BBM is expected to become available on non-BlackBerry phones soon. BlackBerry announced earlier this month it is pursuing strategic alternatives, one of which would be a sale of the company.
Microsoft has put its finishing touches on Windows 8.1 and Windows RT 8.1 and has started releasing both versions to hardware manufacturers. However, consumers still need to wait until October 18th. That's when Windows 8.1 is launched to the public before we can all purchase the update and start using it. Windows 8.1 was designed to fix some of the issues in Windows 8 and win over the public with a touch-friendly approach to desktop computing.
A Samsung executive told the Korea Times that the company will unveil the Galaxy Gear smartwatch at a Samsung event on September 4th. According to a translated version of the Korea Times report, the watch will use a non-flexible display, but future versions may include flexible technology. The watch is going to be targeted at young trendsetters, so I guess us old fogies are not in the market for a watch.
Right, you're an old fogey. Looks like Apple have an in-store trade-in program for iPhones. MacRumors Eric Slivka said that a training program is underway, and Mark Gurman of 9to5Mac says his sources say it will start in September. Matthew Ponzarino over at TechCrunch found the program being tested in a few retail stores already. The pilot program checks for condition, pays you a few $100 on a gift card that must be used immediately to buy a new phone, and any remainder money can then be kept on the iTunes gift card to use however you want. Damaged phones can be recycled at the stores as well, but you won't get any money for those.
Amazon has launched its new Mobile Associates API that gives Android and Kindle Fire developers the ability to earn up to 6% of every sale from goods users buy on Amazon.com through in-app purchases. Developers can sell a single item from within the app or point to a category of products or bundle physical and digital goods together.
Dell introduced three new Latitude series laptops. The Latitude 7000 series runs on Intel Haswell processors, comes in 12 and 14-inch models, and feature carbon fiber lids. The 5000 and 3000 series models include a 14 and 15-inch model. The lower-end 3000 series starts at $599, and the high-end 7000 series starts at $1049. Both the 3000 and 7000 series will be available starting September 12th. That mid-range 5000 series, there's no price yet on that, but they will be available in October.
If you have to ask, you can't afford it. Facebook has announced shared photo albums, allowing different users to upload images to the same album. Up to 50 people can share an album, and each can post as many as 200 photos. If you set up an album, you control whether contributors can invite others or not, and albums themselves can be available to the public, friends of contributors, or limited to just the contributors themselves. The feature came out of a January Facebook hackathon.
Speaking of Facebook, the company is getting ready to pay out $9 million to approximately 614,000 users as part of a $20 million legal settlement brought on by users after Facebook displayed their pictures in sponsored stories ads without permission. Yeah, we're going to be so rich. In fact, individual payouts will be $15 each.
Whoa. No.
Well, at least that's higher than the $10 payout that was proposed under an earlier version of the settlement. So it's looking up for us. The payouts will only go to those who responded to a notice earlier this year. It's too late to do it now.
Darn it. not rich. Apple TV inched forward in features and revealed a little more about who it might have been in negotiations with. The Apple TV now has apps for music video service Vevo, the Disney Channel, and Disney XD, though you have to verify that you have the right cable provider to use those. The Weather Channel and Smithsonian apps, however, don't require any verification. The U.S. gets all these channels, and they'll vary in availability by region elsewhere.
Arm announced it's picking up Sensinode, a startup that makes Internet of Things software. Sensinode helped build a compression format for IPv6 that allows for low-power, low-bandwidth wireless links. Arm said it's going to continue to sell Sensinode's products. Financial terms of the deal were not disclosed.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy for me to have a book site at meritbooks.squarespace.com or my podcast Sword and Laser about science fiction with Veronica Belmont, swordandlaser.com. Those are my sites. What about your sites? You guys are doing amazing things with Squarespace out there. Some of our audience members have been sending us a tweet with a link to some of their sites with the hashtag TNT Squarespace. And today, we're taking a look at themusicservice.net. We've mentioned this one before, but if you didn't get a chance to look at it, you got to check it out. A good example of using the blog template makes it really easy to navigate the site. Makes it look like they did so much work. And I'm sure they put a lot of work into their content, but they didn't have to sweat it on the navigation and on the architecture. Under the new music section, you can find embedded music videos. They play right in the player on the site with clips linked from YouTube or Vimeo. And you can easily share posts on all your favorite social media. The vinyl picture in that background, by the way, on the main page. Yeah, right up there. Oh, that's just beautiful. Totally get what this site's about immediately. It's just a great site, themusicservice.net. Taking advantage of Squarespace, who have won numerous awards, design awards from FWA, the Webbies, Forbes, AWW Awards. Awards. Anyway, it's clever, but it's a good award, and they won it. Easy to use, too. The customer support team has won numerous industry awards for customer support. They recently got a Gold Stevie Award. If you want to have an award-winning site, all you got to do is get Squarespace. Start a trial with no credit card required. Start building your website. And when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT8 to get 10% off and to show your support for Tech News Today. Don't forget to send a tweet with the hashtag TNT Squarespace. We could be choosing your Squarespace site to mention on a future episode. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today and for their support of my sites, because that's awesome, too. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. All right, everything you need to create an exceptional roundtable discussion is Callie Lewis from GeekBeat.tv, and she joins us now. How's it going, Callie?
Great, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us. You're coming from home. I'm sorry to hear about your studio. I hope everything gets cleaned up soon.
Yeah, for anybody who doesn't know, our studio flooded this weekend. We had a major water pipe burst, and water just gushed the entire place. So we're still trying to figure out exactly what kind of damage we're looking at and all that good stuff. So I am from home and horrible lighting and all of that, but hey, I'm here.
Yay. Thank you so much for persevering. And I hope you get that all cleaned up quickly and as easily as possible. Geekbeat.tv, folks, check it out. Let's start off by talking about that BlackBerry spinoff report from the Wall Street Journal, Sarah.
Yeah, so we're trying to figure out, well, what's BlackBerry going to do? It wants to get sold, and it sounds like the messaging service may become a subsidiary that you mentioned, Tom, in the news views that would maybe not operate completely independently, but more independently. It looks like some of the team has moved over to BlackBerry Messenger and working on some things that move beyond how we feel about BlackBerry Messenger. It's not just a way to basically chat with friends. Maybe there would be video chatting as well. Maybe there would be a desktop option to bring in more people that are possibly familiar with BlackBerry in the enterprise but aren't really familiar with BBM or don't have a need for it until now. Obviously, CEO Thorsten Hines had said BlackBerry Messenger was going to be available for the first time on smartphones other than BlackBerry's. So the company is certainly open to getting BBM out there. Also, BBM channels, this is something that people familiar with the matter told the Wall Street Journal, BBM channels would be almost like a Twitter-like tool to allow brands and celebrities to closely interact with customers, with fans. I don't really know where they're going with that, but I guess it's one of those things where why not see if it takes off, that sort of thing. But I think a little perspective to have here is that BlackBerry Messenger has said publicly that they've got, there are around 60 million users. This is according to the company. That's sort of a vague number. We don't exactly know if that's daily active or whatever. A company like WhatsApp, small startup based in the Silicon Valley, has over 200 million active users. That's, again, according to the company and other metrics. So I wonder really what BlackBerry expects to achieve, who they're expecting to go after or at least compete with something like this. I mean, is it something like WhatsApp? WhatsApp is way ahead of BBM. Is it more like a Skype or an AOL Instant Messenger? Kelly, what do you think?
Well, I think it's actually a brilliant move. I mean, I think it can go in a lot of different directions. Separating it from BlackBerry, I mean, if you take BlackBerry users, they love BBM. They just, it's probably their favorite thing about BlackBerry, at least the ones I've talked to. And so having it be able to compete on a cross-platform level is opening up their opportunity for to compete with somebody like WhatsApp. You know, I mean, if it's as awesome as, you know, BlackBerry users say it is, then it could kind of trickle out to everyone. But on the other hand, you know, if they are kind of opening it up for cross-platform and separating that out, BlackBerry users themselves might actually think, oh, well, I can get another type of device and still use BBM. Awesome. I'll go Android and still use BBM or something like that. You know, that it also presents some challenges for BlackBerry. But hey, they want to sell it anyway, right?
I think this really shows the dysfunctional nature of BlackBerry in glaring detail. According to that Wall Street Journal report, 3 years ago, they were able to port BBM to other platforms and decided not to. If they had done it now, before KakaoTalk and Line and WeChat and WhatsApp, they could have totally dominated the cross-platform messaging space because they have such a built-in, they still do, a large number of people who love BBM and use it. If they had done it in advance, they would have captured the market. But they held off until it was too late. Now it's a dire move. They're doing this to show that BBM still has value, which it does, in anticipation of a sale. So that somebody says, oh, well, we need to count the value of BBM because we haven't been including that in the sale price. It's a really seriously capitalistic move, not done for the right reasons. I think it still could be something of a success because there are so many people, as Callie mentioned, who still love BBM and still use it. But it's almost too late, and it's done for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. They should have done it way, way long ago. But I think it still has a lot of potential, even for the wrong reasons or being too late or anything like that. If they can get past the reputation of BlackBerry, if, you know, a lot of people kind of growing up without BlackBerries, they may see BBM and not actually associate it with the company RIM. So,
which I guess is a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's odd to think BBM Inc. might be stronger in the end than BlackBerry itself.
Yeah, but like you were talking about, the dysfunction of BlackBerry, Tom, the thing is, by having a separate entity that can actually negotiate and not be stuck to the BlackBerry hardware, I mean, this being cross-platform is great, and they could have done it years ago. If they had this division a long time ago, they probably would have been on everything. Kind of like Amazon has its Kindle software everywhere, but they don't really mess with the Kindle hardware division, which is kind of, I think that would work best if it requires BlackBerry to build a wall between itself and its hardware and software. Maybe this could be better for the long run because this will be the thing that survives BlackBerry. That hardware unit's probably going to die, but BlackBerry Messenger will probably be around for a while.
If you've got a long password and you're feeling secure, you might still need a longer one. Dan Gooden over at Ars Technica has a report today about OCL Hashcat Plus. That is a program that in its newest version, 0.15, went from a 15-character brute force limit to a generally 55-character attempt. In fact, it can go from 24 to 64, depending on what hash it's attacking and the technique you use. But if you don't know OCL Hashcat, it's a program meant to take advantage of dozens of graphics cards to break into passwords. Now, it has a legitimate use. This isn't just for nefarious uses. For pen tests, people doing security testing to make sure that they've got a nice, secure firewall around their corporate environment, they need tools like this. It can do up to 8 billion guesses per second on a virtually unlimited number of compromised hashes. So it can take that hash database that it steals and just go to town on it. As an example, Gooden says a typical TrueCrypt configuration attacked by a PC running OCL Hashcat Plus, and just two AMD HD 6990 video cards can cycle through 223,000 password candidates a second, fast enough to exhaust all 14.3 million words contained in the seminal Rockyou dump of passwords in 65 seconds. The Rockyou dump is kind of the standard for, like, here are the most common passwords used on the internet and how to figure out their hashes. Passwords analysis and cracking kit is also out, which can be used with OCL Hashkit. PAC, as it's called, was developed by Peter Kechergensky as a way to customize your attack to the password policy. So all those great password policies that say, oh, you must be limited to 8 characters, and you must have one capital letter, or you must not use any special characters, you can customize the attack to eliminate all the possibilities that would violate the password policy and makes it easier for the hackers to get in. The upshot of this is it's going to be really easy if you're using a phrase that can be found on the internet. Anything from a Wikipedia article, anything from a book, any kind of quotation, any just natural language phrase that's common, used to be considered somewhat secure. That is no longer secure at all in this. And OCL Hashcat can go after 55 letter long passwords of any kind and possibly get at them. Obviously, this means you need more secure passwords. And this can go after things like LastPass and stuff like that. What do we do? What do we do for password safety now, Callie?
Well, I mean, you say it can go after like LastPass or 1Password, but if you are using the randomizer in 1Password, which is the one I use, it shouldn't be able to access those, right?
Well, if it can't get into LastPass, so you need a 56-character password.
Right, so saying your main password has to be even more secure.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think you come up with a really good, I mean, we're all smart human beings. We can remember one really secure password. It may take you a few times or, you know, take you some memorization time, but just do it and use 1Password or LastPass or whatever to make sure that all of your passwords are different across all of the different sites. And you're using those randomizers because you don't want to use any of those types of passwords on any of the sites out there. As we've seen in the past, one site gets hacked, all of your passwords are at risk. So I think we just need to take advantage of the tools that we have out there, like these that we're mentioning, and just put the effort into a single really good password. Don't use something with uppercase and lowercase and numbers, not a phrase, not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, not your favorite drink like coffee. You know, I mean, none of that. You just have to put the effort in first. So that's all it takes.
And multi-factor.
I think the biggest issue, it seems like, with these sorts of things is, let's say you make up a great password. I mean, it's rock solid. It's a nonsensical word. You've got, symbols and numbers and the whole thing. The problem is that people say, all right, well, I don't want to have to do that again. So then you've got the same password across a variety of services. One service is vulnerable, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's like you've scribbled that nonsensical password on a big billboard somewhere because it's all the same. I think that's probably more of an issue, really, than people choosing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, maybe I'm giving them too much credit, but
yeah,
in general, that seems to be more of an issue.
Hello says in the chat room, you know, 2-factor is important to integrate.
Yeah, and with 2-factor for now is a good defense against this, but it's just going to keep going down this road, and I hope someone soon comes up with a better way of logging in. There's all kinds of efforts out there. We've talked about a few of them on the show. I'm cheering for all of them. Something that's more secure. So be sure to watch Security Now with Steve Gibson. I'm sure he's going to have a great conversation about this if you really want to understand what's going on with it. Let's move to somewhat more pleasant fields. Watch some videos and get your weather information from Apple TV.
Yeah, so Apple updated the Apple TV today with a bunch of new apps, 5 apps, Disney Channel, Disney XD, Smithsonian, and the Weather Channel. Now, Watch Disney requires you to authenticate on another device, and Watch Disney XD requires you to activate as well. I was able to activate the Disney Channel. Apparently, the basic package I have does not have XD. The Disney Channel is kind of interesting. It's got several sections. It's got an on-demand section. It also has a live section. So whatever's on Disney at that time, you can be watching that directly live as it's happening. It even shows you a program guide as to what's coming up later on in the day. The Smithsonian Channel's got a bunch of video clips like science and nature, history, kids sections, and full episodes as well. The Weather Channel adds like a bit of a dashboard-like feel. You have your weather, and there's also featured content, like video content such as programs. I didn't know Weather Channel even had programs. Like, these are like reality-based programs like Iron Man, Destination Uncharted. It's got video content broken up by interest. It's got it's very, very Apple-like with its recreation, environment, and nature clips. Also has a recently watched section. Vivo, there's a Vivo TV section, which runs just like a regular channel. You just turn it on, and there you go. You got videos. You can't do anything with it. You can't, like, fast forward or anything. I think you can rewind. I got to double check that. I was testing out all of these apps this morning. There's a search. You can even link it to your Vivo account so you can manage playlists once you get to a computer that way. Callie, does any of this sound exciting to you that Apple TV is getting more and more apps?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, they should. Especially with Disney. I mean, that's a long time coming. Why haven't they done that in the past? They have a relationship with them, for goodness sakes. I think it's a very good move in terms of, especially Disney, when you look at Netflix, that is kid-friendly content is one of people's favorite things, you know, about Netflix, and even though it's not, you know, direct. Yeah, more apps, more choices, better for everyone, right?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the weather app. I tried that this morning, and just being able to, like, go straight to my local forecast and play a short minute and a half forecast just for me in a nice pleasant Weather Channel talent telling it was pretty cool. It was pretty awesome. I know I can get
now,
that on TV, and I know I can get that online, but yeah, it's video. It's right there on your television.
Okay.
Sailor Line in the chat room says you can fast forward and rewind Vivo with the Apple TV remote. Thanks for that note. I'm looking at the Apple TV interface. It's getting more and more packed. Okay, so we got a lot of these apps. And you can, through like little hacks, you can hide them through the parental controls. But do we ever see Apple TV actually opening up? Or are we always going to see this very stylized? Every application looks very consistent. That's something I do enjoy when it comes to Apple TV. If you look at something like the Roku, the interfaces can be very, very varied when it comes to app to app to app. Are we ever going to see an open Apple TV ecosystem? Or are we just going to get these random updates, which Apple doesn't even seem to promote?
I'm sorry, open and Apple? Did you use that in the same sentence?
There is an iOS app store that does exist. It's not so open, but it's more open than Apple TV.
Yeah.
Well,
that would be
Farmer
nice.
Dan wrote an interesting post a couple hours ago. He said the HBO Go app, when that came to Apple TV, the HBO folks said, yeah, we made this completely in-house. You know, it's not something that Apple really has a hand in. So he says, There may be some Apple TV SDK that Apple is experimenting with a small group of companies. If it works out well, they seem to be opening it up to other partners. And, you know, eventually we're probably going to see an Apple TV app store. I think that's a great idea. I hope that's what we see. Obviously, it's going to have to work differently than some sort of iOS app store or even a Mac app store. But I think that that's the way to go, really, to think of these companies as third-party devs that can then submit apps to the Apple TV store.
It would make sense.
I like to look at these two and think, okay, they've obviously been talking to Disney, which we probably could have guessed. Apple and Disney have that close relationship anyway, but they've obviously been talking to Vivo about whatever that Apple television that's supposedly in the offing is going to be. And they've been talking to the Weather Channel, which means they've been talking to the Weather Channel's parent company, which I think is NBC Universal, which I think is Comcast. So that's interesting. Lots of interesting things to surmise from there. I don't know what any of them mean either. Let's talk about Facebook shared photo albums. This is something that seems small, but people are really excited about it.
Well, people are really excited about it, but that's sort of funny to me because this is definitely functionality that exists in standalone apps already. In fact, I think we've talked about Albumatic on this show. If not, I've certainly talked about it on i5 as well as Cluster. These are two apps that basically do what Facebook's replicating. So the idea is right now, let's say all five of us go to a wedding. We all take 100 pictures. And it's, you know, it's, it would be great to be able to put them all in a pool. The idea is this: now, instead of I upload my photos into some sort of an album, Tom uploads his photos, I as Callie, Jason, we can all contribute to a single album so we can share and be able to pull down photos from the album. We each have the ability to upload 200 pictures to that shared album. And as an administrator, if I was the one that set it up, I've got a little bit more settings than everybody else, but you would have control over the your own photos that you are adding to the pool. So in cases of an event, a graduation, a wedding, you know, anywhere that we're all sort of together at once, I think this makes perfect sense. And this did come from a hackathon that Facebook does pretty regularly. A couple of engineers at the company say, yeah, you know, we're trying to solve a problem that nobody else has solved. But this is definitely a Me Too feature of Facebook. This functionality does work in other apps. But I wonder how many people who upload photos to Facebook every day, and there are millions of them, know about the fact that this functionality exists before. Probably very few outside of Silicon Valley. Probably not that many, or people who work in tech at all. So I think this is probably a really, really killer feature for Facebook, just because the act of, hey, we all went to this fun party and took a bunch of pictures, is something that people use on Facebook all the time. Callie, what do you think? Is this something that you feel there's a need for? And would you go to Facebook to share photos with all your friends, or do you do that already?
Well, I'd be surprised if I could even find this feature on Facebook. I can't find anything on Facebook. It's a killer feature, as you said. It is something that it kind of goes to the core of what Facebook users do on the site. It's all about sharing, and it's all about events and family and friends. So it makes perfect sense. First comes to mind privacy, you know, it seemed like there was some good privacy settings in there, or control settings at least. It goes to the core of how Facebook users use the site. So it's something that they should have done a while back ago, in terms of what you said about how many people are actually going to know about it. They're going to have their work cut out too. Kind of distribute the information. I'm not sure really how most Facebook users, I have a hard time integrating Facebook into my daily life outside of the fact that I'm on it for, you know, sharing everything that I do, but I don't use it in terms of family. So I'm not really sure how people discover those new features. You guys?
I'm with you, Callie. It's sort of a foreign land. I traips into Facebook every once in a while.
That sounds horrible from tech people, right?
But I think that's one of the interesting things about Facebook, is it is a lot more popular outside of the Silicon Valley crowd, whether you're in Silicon Valley or not, than it is within. And so it could almost be the opposite of the BBM discussion. This is way too late to the game, in a sense, but it doesn't matter because Facebook has such a huge population. It's not faltering. It's got a huge audience, and the people who use Facebook every day, which aren't you and me, are going to love this. They're going to say, oh, this is fantastic. I no longer have the confusion over sharing the photos, because so many people share photos on Facebook.
Yeah, that's exactly it. A little over a year ago, Google introduced something similar to this at Google I/O. It was Google Events, where you could open up event, and then everybody that had, you know, a phone that was logged into it, to this event functionality, all the photos that they take, it hits the stream. I thought that was so awesome, had so much potential. But the problem is people don't necessarily, in as great a numbers as Facebook, use Google Plus in that way. Facebook, absolutely. Went to a wedding 3 weeks ago, and I had to install a separate app from this, you know, random developer to do the same thing like this. But everybody's already in Facebook. I think this is going to be interesting if the everyday person understands why and how.
Well, if they could tie
Ayaz, go ahead.
Oh, thanks. If they could tie it to graph search a little bit better, so let's say, you know, photos of somebody's event that way, then you could actually find
do it
these
more
things
automatically.
Right.
Yeah.
Because like Callie's saying, it's really hard to find stuff on Facebook. They've introduced the graph search, but it doesn't really, it's not exactly intuitive. So if you were thinking like you're uploading a bunch of photos where you're like, hey, you know, I was at this concert with Jason, photos of by Jason at this concert. So maybe if they were tagged already, Although I'm sure Facebook could do a more automated thing that would freak people out by checking, you know, geolocation data.
I bet they could, yeah, pretty easily.
This is probably the nice way to go, we'll integrate this now. In the future, I think this could be way more powerful. But this is something that seems like it should have been a Facebook for the longest time, because I don't like going to my first friend's photo album, then the second person, the third one.
Up,
so
yeah.
It's just a long time coming.
Mm-hmm. I think it probably makes the most sense, and you know, I'm just guessing here, to create a standalone app, have the feature involved in Facebook somehow, but create a standalone app that's all about, there already is a Facebook Photos app, but some sort of an app that's designed to create albums around, yeah, events and geolocation. That freaks people out, but that's actually how apps that already do this work so well. It's like, hey, I noticed that you, Tom, and I, as Jason and Callie, were all at the same place. Would you like to upload these 12 photos that you took between noon and 4? I think if, as long as it can be rolled out in the least creepy way possible, and for Facebook, I know that's a challenge. I think a lot of people would just be like, it's magic. I love this.
Yeah, you're probably right, Sarah, because people feel that way about lots of things on Facebook already. It's a love-hate relationship that the public seems to have with them. I has told you a little bit about a company. I keep wanting to call them Sensodyne, which is the toothpaste. Sensinode, an Internet of Things company. Let me give you a little background on why Arm is interested in them. In July, Arm began to transform part of its Cambridge headquarters into a hub for Internet of Things research. Arm wants to sell its Cortex-M low-power processor into the Internet of Things market. IMS Research estimates that by 2020, there will be 30 billion Internet of Things chips being sold. Arm currently sells 8.7 billion. So they would like to get in on that potential market. They started MBED, it's M-B-E-D. That's a project for developing ARM-based microcontrollers for controlling the sensors and the small devices that are Internet of Things. And Sensinode OI makes software. The NanoStack is a low-power IPv6 software that allows the things to communicate with themselves. And then NanoRouter Edge connects all of the things to the Internet. So this is all about putting sensors in tiny things, not just about turning on your lights with a smartphone. It's about meters. It's about valves. Sensinode created 6LowPAN. That's an IPv6 over low-power wireless personal area networks. And CoAP, Constrained Application Protocol Standards. They're also contributing to Zigbee. You've probably heard of that for home automation. Etsy, not the crap marketplace, but ETSI and OMA. So streetlight control. You can turn off whole neighborhood streetlights on and off with more efficiency. Parking meters. We've all used those parking meters that wirelessly connect. Smart meters on your home, creating a mesh network using 6LowPAN and then connecting to the internet. Sensors, switches, valves, all that kind of stuff. This shows that this market is beginning to become a real thing in the next couple of years. That excites me. Callie, I know you're into this kind of stuff too. What kind of stuff can you imagine us being able to take advantage of in the future?
Well, I mean, you mentioned some of the things, you know, being able to, as a community, control power, which is something that a lot of big companies are talking about. There are whole developments in development that are based around the fact that communities can work to control their own power consumption and all of that stuff. So, you know, that would play really well in that scenario. I mean, gosh, we could do so many things. Right now, we're seeing a lot of home automation types of things and personal ability to kind of control our world around us. But it has super, super flaws in the fact that nothing works together. Lowe's has a home automation system that kind of allows other platforms to work with it, but nobody else is doing it. It's all very proprietary, which is a big problem. So this, I could see kind of fixing that problem in the future.
You know what I want? I want that fridge that was promised to me at like CES in 2000 that will know when my milk went sour and order milk to be delivered to me and actually, you know, as I throw things away, make a grocery list for me based on that, because there's sensors in the fridge and there's sensors in the trash can and it's all connected to the internet.
And a robot that will throw that milk out for you, right?
Exactly.
I just want to
Yeah, those would be perfect.
With all the connected devices, all I want to be able to do is find the stuff. That's about it. Okay, like there's like find my iPhone and then you can do this. And I know that there's a bunch of Bluetooth tags out there that you can get now. You should be able to find your gear. But if everything is connected, that means I don't lose anything anymore. So like in my garage, I've got a ton of bins and boxes full of like USB cables or like just random computer parts. If these things were always connected anyway, and I had like an inventory system as opposed to those things like Delicious Library or even a book, something that cataloged everything I have, that would make it a lot easier. I basically want an inventory control system for
Siri,
all the stuff.
Siri, where's my FireWire drive? It's like, in the closet.
I do not know what FireWire is.
Yeah.
You don't even have to ask Siri, though, because your app would just show you where it's at.
Ken from Chicago is right. Okay, Google, where's my keys? Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And Madeira actually in the chat room said, NSA is loving this. Absolutely right. Everything connected. It presents a lot of security issues.
Totally. It's not a reason we shouldn't do it, but it like any kind of advance in connectivity of any kind, you have to understand the negative implications and plan for them. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, let's finish up with a 3D laptop camera that can follow us around. Talk about your security implications. This is Intel announcement about kind of, is it motion sensing? Explain this.
Okay, so it's a 3D laptop camera, and it uses a depth sensing technology. That's what it's kind of like the Kinect. So the Kinect uses two cameras to figure out things. It can track you. Intel's director of Perceptual Products and Solutions, bet you didn't know they had one of those, Anil Nanduri said, these cameras will be able to sense your excitement and emotion. The cameras also can track your eyes, and they talked about, let's say a child is trying to read something and they're not understanding a word, it can actually track and try to help you out when you don't understand something. I don't know why I use a child as an example, because I know I run into that all the time. Identifying things, these cameras also will be able to tell what you're showing it. So if you have like a phone, so Nanduri says you'll never have to look for a new case for your phone. You simply show it to the camera. The camera could then effectively scan it, print out a case for you using a 3D printer, or you could go to a store that can print it out for you. And a depth sensing picture of a model can be extracted to reveal exact specifications and other details of a design, which could then be printed. So there's lots of functions for this. As for timing, the first cameras are going to appear in external webcams in the coming quarters, so soon, I guess. And Nanduri says the cameras will trickle down to smartphones and tablets, but we will see them in laptops. This is the only thing I had for like a definite time frame. In the second half of 2014, we're going to see these cameras in Ultrabooks and notebooks. Callie, you think this is going to help sales of laptops, or is this going to be like some kind of 3D printing gimmick?
Will it help sales? Yes, it'll help sales because salespeople will figure out how it works for, you know, people to get excited about. And as we've kind of hinted at throughout some of these privacy and security conversations today, most people, the majority of the world, don't really think about, you know, implications like that before they buy because it's exciting. This is inevitable. With everything that's going on in technology right now, something like this camera is inevitable. It completely scares the heck out of me. but also on the positive side, if it can track your emotions, I wonder if it could even, you know, bring up a, you know, I'm sensing that you're sad today. Would you like to play your favorite YouTube video? You know, something like my favorite YouTube video that makes me happy is that kitten, the tickle kitten. I don't remember what it's called, but it's like tickle and she goes, ah! You know what I'm talking about?
I do. I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know, something like that kind of help you through your emotional crisis, maybe. I don't think it can stare lovingly into your eyes, as somebody in the chat room pointed out. But these types of things, I think we need the capability as users to be able to turn that stuff off. The HP Z1, one of my favorite things about that computer is the ability to turn the camera away from you. I don't like having cameras staring at me constantly. I know that sounds paranoid, but I want the ability to kind of turn away that camera or cover it up in some way. Am I crazy?
I think the whole emotion thing is kind of silly. I
I don't like the idea. I think the eye tracking thing is mildly interesting. We've talked about the limitations and how it couldn't work. And if you look away, you don't necessarily want your video to pause and blah, blah, blah. But the emotion stuff just bugs me. I don't feel like I want my technology to try to glean whether I'm pretending to be happy or genuinely sad or that sort of thing. It seems really gimmicky to me, but it's probably not something that's going to go away anytime soon because, yeah, salespeople are you know, it's that wow factor, right, of this technology can read your thoughts.
To be honest, it is a gimmick at this point, but that's anytime we see something like this come through, in my experience, it's not going to work exactly like they say. It's going to be a novelty for the first 3 years, and then it'll turn into something that's actually probably useful.
Took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly what I was going to say. No, that's great. Like, I 100% agree with you because voice recognition, even databases back in the, like, 70s were all sort of over-promising what they could do, but they eventually have started to turn around and they actually can fulfill that promise. So, yeah, it might be a long time before this becomes useful, and it is probably gimmicky right now.
Yeah, but combining that with the Internet of Things situation, so then if you are having a bad day, your music can turn on. Maybe your robot cat shows up. I mean, lots of different things happen to try to cheer you up. Remember, the robotic cats are going to happen again.
Actually. I made your eyes, cat. Let's move on to the randomizer. All right, it was a close vote right down to the wire here. We had three of them today. Super Mario Brothers Parkour in real life. If you want to see it, look it up. That's the headline in YouTube. Only got 29% of the vote. A wearable computer more powerful than glass and even more awkward with 34% of the vote. And Hex, a tiny hackable smartphone-controlled copter. It's a quadcopter. Available for $39 on Kickstarter. Got 37% of the vote. Just nudging into first place. This is essentially like your own private drone. Now, you're going to have to follow local laws and things. But for $39, you get the basic quadricopter set. That's the shell and the propellers. The highest package, priced at $2,000 and $3,000, include custom design copters and entry into beta testing. But you can hack these things. You can control them with your smartphone. You can spy on the neighbors. Don't do that. Don't spy on the neighbors.
I love him. Look at it. It's a little friend.
Talk about being afraid of cameras looking at you. There's going to be copters everywhere in the future.
Yes, there are. Those are scary, but completely awesome.
At least they're noisy enough that you notice them, right? You're hearing that buzzing.
They are now.
Not all.
Yeah.
When they get silent is when you got to start freaking
out. A whisper quiet drone from Hex.
There are already silent drones in like the shape of birds that spy, that the government uses to spy. You know, I mean, like they exist. It's just a matter of getting to the consumer level.
All right, let's check and see if there's anything on the calendar. Sarah, do you see any?
Well, there is. Let me unearth this. Oh, new Nexus 7 is coming to the UK on the 28th. That's tomorrow. It'll start at £199. Go get it while it's hot.
Go get them, UK. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
I got a message from Eric. He said, when Yahoo announced their email wishlist program, I was very excited and looked forward to the possibility of getting a better username. I received the email yesterday. It started stating that one of my chosen usernames was available, and I immediately signed up for it merging with my existing account. I now regret that decision. It has become very clear the reason the previous owner abandoned their account is because of the ridiculous amount of spam it receives. Over the past hour, I'm averaging one spam email to my inbox every 4 minutes and one spam email to my spam folder every 2 minutes. In the past, I've been very selective about giving out my Yahoo email address and had managed to keep it spam-free. Now I need to find a way to fix this mess.
Oh, my God.
Or may just have to abandon my Yahoo account altogether. So before anyone signs up for that great Yahoo username they've always wanted, I urge them to consider why the original owner stopped using it.
Your mileage may vary, and once you get control of that account, you don't need to merge it into your main account. I believe there is a way to unmerge it. So, Eric, don't fret. You could probably pull it back out again. But, wow, that's one of those scare stories that everybody was worried about, huh?
I got my email from Yahoo saying, you can get this. And I did not pick it up yet. And now I saw this email. I'm like, oh, right. But my Yahoo account's already spam anyway. So what's the
difference? And that's exactly it, right? A lot of the people who would just let this terminate and expire would be the ones that are like, you know what? I don't even use it anymore. It's unusable because of spam. That's my situation. It's totally a spam bucket. Log in there every once in a while and find a choice email that's hidden in you know, that haystack. But yeah, if somebody else got my email, they'd be inundated with spam.
I would say don't use the program, but right. Hold off on merging accounts until you're sure what's going on in the account that you got. I didn't get mine. So now I'm going to go after that person and start spam. No, I'm not.
It's on camera.
Yeah, I know. There's always cameras looking at me because I do this show every day. Thank you, Callie Lewis, for joining us today. Again, I'm so sorry about the water damage. I hope everything turns out all right. But you guys are you're still doing great stuff over there at GeekBeat.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And happy to be on as always. Thanks, guys.
GeekBeat.tv to keep up with all the things that Callie's doing. You got anything in particular besides the great flood?
You had to show that face. Sorry, what?
You got anything else coming up that you want to talk about?
We have a lot of great content coming out, a lot of shows that we're working on. In particular, in the next couple of weeks, I should be releasing a big project that I've been working on, reviewing all sorts of different health and fitness devices and gadgets. So that's one thing to look forward to.
Awesome. Check that out, geekbeat.tv. Also, check out our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. If you'd like to have a little bit of a say in what we talk about, we look at that as one of our sources of what are the interesting things to talk about there in the world of technology, technewstoday.reddit.com. Also, if you're watching live, or you can watch live tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time, we'll be recording our mid-year listener co-host show. We usually do this during the holidays, and we pulled it off this year thanks to Jason Howe. We're going to do a listener co-host show in the middle of the year as well. It will appear in the Tech News Today feed if you're not watching live on Monday, September 2nd. That's Labor Day. We won't be doing a regular show then, but we will have a new show for you in that feed. Thanks to everybody for watching and listening. You can find us at twit.tv/TNT, email us TNT@twit.tv, or give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Our guest for tomorrow canceled, but Jonathan Strickland rode to our rescue, and he'll be with us tomorrow. We'll see you then.